Well, certainly is a day of affliction. In fact, we just had to tell the lawnmower men to come back later, not today. We'd actually given them a calendar and they had lost it. But, you know, what we're given, we are to strive not to lose. And we can gain understanding in the Book of Revelation and other areas, but certainly the law has to be held close and to be studied, to know that we may be in His will, because we know that His will is laid out for us in the law. And we understand that it's important to strive to do those things which are pleasing to Him and to walk on higher ground. So without further ado, we want to get into the message, and the message is going to be about trumpet blast of Revelation, part 2. And of course we covered the first three trumpet blasts, and there's quite a bit involved there, a lot of destruction, and it looks like it could happen fairly quickly as it's all wrapped up in the seventh seal. But continuing with the fourth angel sounding, Revelation 8 and verse 12, we continue. The New American Standard Bible, the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun and a third of the moon and a third of the stars were struck, so that a third of them would be darkened, and the day would not shine for a third of it, and the night in the same way. It says the third of the heavenly bodies were struck. And I think we can understand that as just a way of saying things have already happened now that are causing the skies to be darkened. However, I recall one scientist saying that the magnitude of one asteroid hitting the Earth would be comparable to us taking all the nuclear bombs and piling them up into one location and detonating them together. One can imagine how one third of the trees could be burned up if this hit a large landmass with a shockwave traveling about 2,000 miles an hour out from the epicenter, wrapping itself around a third of the planet. We did see firsthand not too long ago when a string of icy rocks from a comet, which was torn apart by the gravitational pull, which slammed into Jupiter, caused giant nuclear-like explosions to rise from the planet. The comet was called Shoemaker-Levy 9 by those that had discovered it, but some of those plumes of fiery smoke were larger than the Earth and made dark blotches lingering with smoke for months afterwards. Here you see the crater that was left by one of the rocks, and even on Earth, of the craters that have been left by previous impactments, some barely detectable because of their age, we know of at least one that measures 200 in diameter, but this one on Jupiter looks like it could be thousands of miles in diameter. There is also another possibility, which could cause a third of the sun, moon, and stars to be darkened. And I'm not sure if you realize this, but there are, for all intent and purposes, giant laser beams occurring out in the universe. They're going off one by one. And for each one we can see, there are an estimated 300 that we cannot see. And they travel thousands of light years and sear whatever is in their path with flesh melting intensity, or radiation, actually. But essentially, they are bursts of extreme energy produced by megastars, and megastars are any that are at least 20 times larger than our own sun, and which are dying and have collapsed into a black hole. The energy produced by the gamma ray holds the amount of energy our own sun would produce over its entire life, which is estimated to be about 10 billion years. Here's our sun seen here, and here's a close-up image taken by Japan's Hinode's Solar Optical Telescope satellite. Megastar gamma bursts are so strong that the strength of the black hole cannot contain them. And it actually shoots out both sides. It's going through a rotating implosion of the star, essentially. This description given in this image, better than I can describe, is that it is a drawing of a massive star collapsing to form a black hole. Energy released as jets along the axis of rotation forms a gamma ray burst that lasts from one or a few milliseconds to minutes. Such an event within several thousand light years of Earth could disrupt the biosphere by wiping out half of the ozone layer, creating nitrogen dioxide and potentially causing a mass extinction. Now, scientists have identified one rotating binary system about 8,000 light years away, as it happens to have been found, called Wolf-Wyatt, R104. They have these names. Typically, they'll be the ones that discovered them. But this has at least two stars which are thought to be able to produce supernovas and therefore gamma rays. And the description given in this image is that it is a sequence of 11 frames stacked here and colorized, show the pinwheel system created by the binary system known as Wolf-Rayet 104, seen by the Keck telescope in near infrared. The fact that we can see it spiraling is what has scientists talking. Because if we can see the spiral, then it will most likely be in the line of any gamma ray, which is produced by a collapsing star there. Now, if a gamma ray was to hit the Earth from 8,000 light years away, some say while it would most likely chemically damage the stratosphere and cause smog to form, and this is getting back to the idea that, you know, a third of the sun, moon, and stars not giving their light. But it says that the smog would only cut out about 1 or 2% of the sunlight. But, I would offer that this is only a theory. And in addition, while some think that an asteroid may have caused the mass extinction of the dinosaurs on Earth, others think it may have been, in fact, a gamma ray that hit the Earth. The fact is, we just don't know. But it is interesting to look at the parallel count of the fourth bowl that is poured out. It says the following, Revelation 16, 8 through 9. Then the fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and the power was given to him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and they blasphemed the name of Elohim who has the power over these plagues. And they did not repent and give him glory. The sun would indicate our sun, so would a gamma ray hitting our sun cause it to heat up? Again, we don't know. But it is interesting that it says men were scorched with great heat. Where's the heat coming from? Well, there are just too many unanswered questions to know for sure what will cause these things. But under the direction of Yahweh's guiding hand, all these things which are written in His Word will take place as Bible prophecy has already been proven 100% accurate up to our time. Our own sun will automatically put out more heat as a natural process of its life. About 10% extra illumination, they estimate, over the course of each 1 billion year increment. But what do the scientists really know? I still recall one scientist I heard being interviewed over the radio and giving the analogy of what it would be like to try to describe a car, for example, with just having a piece of the bumper. Okay, you're trying to explain the drivetrain, the windows, the hood, the steering wheel, all these things from a piece of the bumper. That's what this one scientist said. That's where they're at. They're limited. And so they're still finding out more and more and more as each day comes. But there have been some pretty remarkable findings. And this spiraling binary system is one of them, because they realize there are certain things out there that can be harmful to us here. And we're just a speck in the immensity of what is out there. In fact, they just finished a 10-year project in which they focused on a very small part of the sky and photographed it for 10 years. They kept the aperture open essentially at the same time. I don't know exactly how they did it. But over 10 years, it took them 10 years to get this image. And it's the farthest reaching image that they've ever found. So now we have this to look over. In fact, they said that scientists will be looking over the image for years to come because of the distance, of the galaxies. And you can see the spiraling galaxies even out that far. But there's some other things that they're examining and looking at and seeing what it's all about. But again, trying to explain it. Yeah, take a piece of your bumper and go try to explain to someone that's never seen a car, and for yourself who's never seen a car, try to explain the rest of the car. Almost impossible. But Yahweh's in control, and he doesn't let anything happen that doesn't need to happen. In fact, he tells the waves of the ocean, this far you can come and no farther. But sometimes he does let the waves go further. And it may be to get our attention. But going on with the fifth trumpet blast of Revelation, we read in Revelation 9, 1 through 2, then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven which had fallen to the earth, and the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. He opened the bottomless pit, and smoke went up out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. Now, this mentions a star that had fallen, which may go back to the third trumpet blast. But it also mentions the smoke of a great furnace, which sounds like it could be describing a super volcano of some sort. This image, however, is of a recent eruption from a small volcano which took place in March of 2010 in Iceland. And I've got the name posted there. You can try to pronounce that, I'm not going to. But suffice it to say, this was a small ash eruption and would pale in size of a supervolcano. I looked in the dictionary and it said that they think supervolcanoes can eject 1,000 times more volume than typical volcanoes that we've had in the past couple hundred years. It could very well be a supervolcano that the Apostle John was seeing in his vision of the future tribulation, and there are about seven around the globe that they've been able to identify. And like we've already talked about previously, that magma balloon under Yellowstone, Yellowstone National Park, that's continuing in size. You know, we all know you can only blow up a balloon so far and it's going to explode. And that's what they're looking at, their Yellowstone. So, I think up to this point, I think we've seen it at the start of the trumpet blast of Revelation are clearly showing a type of meteor shower hitting the earth, and then a meteor with them, then a large asteroid or even a core of a comet. This is just the kind of stuff that we see in the movies, but it is based on some science. The next part, however, I'm at a loss of what it's speaking about from any natural context. And that's Revelation 9 and verse 3. And out of the smoke came locusts to the earth, and there was given to them authority, as scorpions of the earth have authority. Now, to a certain extent, I can understand the locusts coming forth from the earth. As they actually do hibernate and come forth in swarms. So if they're disrupted from some natural currents, they could come forth. And even half this country was covered in swarms of locusts back in the early 1800s. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but there's been eyewitness accounts. And they describe the locusts coming over the land, and it's like the Black Plague coming over. It's just darkness. And they gave a map. I don't have an image here, but a map of the United States in which they showed a dark cloud going over roughly the west part of the country. And it took up or covered about half the country. Interesting. Well, Yahweh seemed fit to kill them off for this country, but as late as the 1800s, they were destroying everything in their path, eating everything that was organic and green. But in Revelation 9:3, it appears not to be speaking of actual locusts, because these things don't eat up anything green. And while Yahweh can cause them not to eat, this could very well be speaking of an actual army. An army of either demons or of actual men, or men who are considered demonic, or maybe both. But Revelation 4 and verses 5 through, or 4 through 5, Revelation 9, 4 through 5 states, they were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any plant or tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of Elohim on their foreheads. They were not allowed to kill them, but only to torture them for 5 months. And the agony they suffered was like that of the sting of a scorpion when it strikes. Now, while the earlier trumpet blasts of Revelation appear to be physical manifestations of natural occurrences guided by Yahweh's direction, this could actually be more of a demonic release upon mankind. We understand that Satan has the ability to afflict boils and sores like he did on Job with Yahweh's permission. But he was not allowed to kill him. Yahshua said it was in fact Satan that had caused this woman to be in affliction for 18 years with a problem. And so it would be no mystery that if demons might be able to also inflict similar damage to people if allowed to do so. But a further description of this army are given 7 through 10 of Revelation 9. The appearance of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads appeared to be crowns like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like the hair of women. Their teeth were like the teeth of lions. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots, of many horses rushing to battle. They have tails like scorpions and stings, and in their tails is the power to hurt men for 5 months. How do you explain this? John is trying to, from his perspective, the Apostle John, to describe what he's seeing. And there have been suggestions that these are descriptions of current fighting helicopters. If you were the Apostle John, never having seen a military helicopter, how would you describe it? How would you describe this image? Maybe the blades turning look like hair, and the sound certainly would be like chariots of many horses. If you could see in the cockpit, you might see the face of a man. The tails with stingers may be describing the rockets being shot forth from underneath. If these helicopters were together, you might describe them like locusts flying around. One can even explain the teeth of lions with some of these helicopters of war. Concerning the ability to hurt men but not kill them, it might be biological or chemical warfare being put into play, with divine protection put on Yahweh's people, who are sealed in their foreheads. Read Revelation 14, verse 1. What is that seal? And what should we be thinking about long-term in our frontal lobe? But after 5 months, the chemicals or whatever it is could effectively lose its ability to do further harm. And this is just some thoughts, but if it were actual men, which are being talked about with warfare tools like helicopters. However, if it's actual demons, then the following verse would make a lot of sense. Revelation 9, verse 11. they have as a king over them, speaking of these, this army, the angel, or these, basically angel of locusts. They have a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek he is called Apollyon. Now these, both of these names hold the meaning of destroyer, and we all know who the destroyer is, Satan. So these locusts come out of the smoke from a bottomless pit, and their king is Satan. The smoke might be, therefore, be a figurative description of Satan's spirit, or at least influence from his dark spirit. In defense that the fifth trumpet blast of Revelation may indeed be speaking of actual men, there are some parallel comparisons that can be made from the book of Joel, chapter 2, and the book of Revelation, chapter 9, but the comparison of those may actually be better made with the sixth trumpet blast of Revelation rather than with the former one. And if you look at that at some point, you can kind of gather that. But in Revelation 9, 13 through 16, let's look at the sixth trumpet blast. And the sixth messenger sounded, and I heard a voice from four horns of the golden altar, which is before Elohim, saying to the sixth messenger who had the trumpet, release the four messengers, those having been bound at the great river Euphrates. And the four messengers, those having been prepared for the hour and the day and the month and the year, were released to kill a third of mankind. And the number of the armies of the horsemen was 200 million. I heard the number of them. So that was pretty astonishing. The Apostle John must have been astonished. Wow, it's 200 million. I heard it. I heard the name. I heard the number. 200 million. It's an immense amount of people. And this appears to be the mighty army referred to in Joel 2, 1 through, 1 through 2, which we looked at earlier in part 1. Notice at this Joel 2, 1 through 2, blow the trumpet in Zion, sound the alarm on my holy hill. Let all who live in the land tremble, for the day of Yahweh is coming. It is close at hand, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness. Like dawn spreading across the mountains, a large and mighty army comes, such as never was in ancient times, nor ever will be in the ages to come. Going to verse 3, Joel 2 and verse 3, ahead of them a fire has consumed, and behind them a flame burns. Before them the land is like the Garden of Eden, and behind them a desert waste. And from them, there is no escape. Wow. Now, this is different than those who were not to harm the grass, trees, or any green thing in the previous trumpet blast. Though, the whole meaning of this verse could be changed if we replace the word them with it, which, by the way, some translations have done. Reading from the Young's literal translation, Joel 2, verse 3. Before it consumes, or consumed, hath fire, and after it burned doth a flame, as the Garden of Eden is the land before it, and after it a wilderness, a desolation, and also an escape there hath not been to it. Excuse me. Now, if you read it, or read it that way, that makes it the day of Yahweh, which leaves a desert waste after burning everything in its path. And of course, as you go through the seals, the trumpets, bowls, you see a third, you know, not all added up to mean, you know, nine. It'd be how much? 100%. Yeah, it'd be 100. But each time there's a third described there. Thank you for helping me on this Day of Atonement. But there is a lot to consider, and many times we just have to say, well, it could be this way or it could be that way. In the end, Yahweh's way wins out. And so it's best to stay on His team no matter what. But if this is literally a 200 million man army, we have to ask, who is it? Well, it's a people to the east, according to Scripture. And if you consider who it is that is really wanting to end Israel's existence, it's not hard to know where to look. Just look at Israel's neighbors to the east, and you can see Israel here by this little arrow in its tiny little area at the tip of the arrow. And I was looking for that image. We actually have it posted here on our bulletin board, but it says, in the unjust occupation of the Middle East, and it's actually, you know, what they say about Israel. And there's a little flag of Israel there, and it points down to this little spot surrounded by all these nations. But, yeah, look at the neighbors to the east. This is a map. I should just read some of the comments on it. And it's produced by the International Population Center in San Diego, at the San Diego University in California, their Department of Geography. But it says here on the upper left, we can put this back up on screen, Islam's global reach, Muslims are the majority population in nearly 50 countries across Asia and Africa. Indonesia claims the largest Islamic population in the world, nearly 213 million of its 242 million people, 88%. Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Egypt round out the top five largest Muslim populations. And then, of course, at the top right there, you see a graph of some other statistics, and also to the lower right there. But Iraq has 25.3 million. Saudi Arabia has 26.4 million. Iran has 67.3 million. Afghanistan, 29.6 million. Pakistan, 157.5 million. That's over 300 million there. Send up Indonesia and add them to the count, and you'll have well over 500 million to the east of this small little speck of land called Israel. It's conceivable that a 200 million man army could be gathered, especially if other Muslims gathered from India and other areas. In fact, China's Muslim population is one out of every 10. And, you know, of course, then there's Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Afghanistan, Lorelistan. No, I'm just kidding. But there's a lot of Islamic countries just to the east of Israel, and that's the point. Wasn't sure if I should try that joke or not on the Day of Atonement, but you all seem to be able to handle it, so that's good. Okay, I have to find my place here now. Could any more be added to the count? Interesting. How does Gog and Magog play out in all of this? Well, it appears that the timing is about the same. Ezekiel 38:15-16, you will come from your place out of the uttermost parts of the north, you and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great host, a mighty army. You will come up against my people Israel like a cloud covering the land, kind of like the locust. In the latter days, I will bring you against my land, that the nations may know me, when you, O Gog, I vindicate my holiness before their eyes. The timing of the sixth trumpet appears to coincide with Gog and Magog, otherwise known as Armageddon, the battle fought at Megiddo, found in Revelation 16:12, a city in the valley of Jezreel. Could Russia be the uttermost parts of the north? Well, looking at this map, it certainly looks like it. Coming from the north, and with those coming from the east as a battle plan, it most certainly looks good on paper. But there's another option besides Russia There's Turkey, and Turkey has millions of members, but there's an interesting thing about Turkey. They, of course, we read about the Euphrates, and the Euphrates has to dry up for those from the east coming to be able to get into Israel. Turkey has built a dam recently, and they can shut off the water supply to the Euphrates, essentially drying it up. So if we're looking at all the peoples being of one mind, essentially, having the same intent and purpose of wiping Israel off the map, we could be seeing someone like Turkey involved from the north. Would that be considered the far reaches of the north? Possibly. We have to keep an open mind about some of the possibilities, and that's why we're looking at some different things that maybe we haven't really thought about before. Also, Syria has been brought up as a possible, you know, from the north. And, of course, they're having a problem, essentially civil war there today. But things are changing, and things will work out the way Yahweh sees fit. But I guess we need to ask the question, what happens when the armies converge on Israel? What happens? Let's go back to Ezekiel. Let me back up just a minute. Here's these two. We can bring this up. Here's the two areas that are coming into Israel. Here is little old Israel. But when we think of Armageddon and where that's taking place, here's a zoom in for Israel. You see the Sea of Galilee and the lake of the lake at the very top there, but you see the Dead Sea down. Zooming in, we see the Valley of Jezreel is that location just west of the Sea of, well, between the connecting point of the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea there. And then Megiddo, which is that little arrow point, that's the city of Megiddo. So I wanted to at least give you an idea of where this battle is supposed to take place. And will take place because Yahweh's word says it will. But let's go to Ezekiel 38, 18 through 20. And it will come to pass at that time when God comes against the land of Israel, says Yahweh Elohim, that my fury will show in my face. Okay, now we're going to see what happens when the armies converge on Israel. Remember, Israel is the apple of Yahweh's eye. But it says, and it will come to pass at that same time when God comes against the land of Israel, says Yahweh Elohim, that my fury will show in my face. And in my jealousy and in my fire of my wrath I have spoken, surely in that day there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel, so that the fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, the beasts of the field, all creeping things that creep on the earth, and all men who are on the face of the earth shall shake at my presence. The mountains shall be thrown down, the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. And continuing, we see verses 21 through 30, or 23, 21 through 23 of Ezekiel 38. I will call for a sword against Gog through all my mountains, says Yahweh Elohim. Everyone's man's sword will be against his brother, and I will bring him to judgment with pestilence and bloodshed. I will rain down on him, on his troops, and on the many peoples who are with him, flooding rain, great hailstones, fire, and brimstone. Brimstone is sulfur, essentially. And this I will magnify and sanctify myself, and I will be known in the eyes of many nations. Then shall they know that I am Yahweh. And what has Yahweh wanted from the very beginning? Obedience from the heart. He is going to knock people upside the head to teach them that he is the one to be listened to, the one to be obeyed, the one to be honored, and for us to humble ourselves before him. And this is what we're doing here today. This appears to be the timing of the seventh trumpet blast of Revelation and the conclusion of the day of Yahweh, which ushers in Yahshua, the Messiah and King. Revelation 11, verse 15. Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Master and of his Messiah, and he will reign forever and ever." Skipping down to verse 19, Revelation 19. And the temple of Elohim, which is in heaven, was open, and the ark of his covenant appeared in his temple. And there were flashes of lightning and sounds and peals of thunder and a earthquake and a great hailstorm. And of course, this parallels with Ezekiel's account we've just read, in that the timing is the same. And when it is said and done, Yahshua comes. 1 Corinthians 15:52. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. Indeed, a great day that will be. Zechariah 14:4. On that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, east of Jerusalem, and the Mount of Olives will split in two from east to west, forming a great valley, with half of the mountains moving to the north and half moving south. And this is the end of it all, or rather the start. But it is the light at the end of the tunnel and a new beginning on earth, one in which the law will go forth from Zion and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem, of which his kingdom will have no end. And we'll go ahead and close out with this scripture. Isaiah 2 and verse 4. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. A time to rebuild. A time of rest. A time to reflect on Yahweh and his ways. What better time than now to prepare for that time ahead of us? To be the bride who will rule with the coming king. For us today, it is the Day of Atonement. For the true atonement, the true atonement is after Yahshua's return. But before that is tribulation like this world has never seen before. May Yahweh bless.